of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Please be seated. Last week, I walked into the girls' clothing section of Target with a small white gift tag that said, Angela, age 9. On the back, it said that her favorite color was pink, and it said that she would like an outfit for Christmas. Having never met Angela, I suddenly realized that this was not going to be as easy as I thought it was. Her favorite color is pink, but what kind of pink? There's hot pink, there's soft, pale, princessy pink. I also realized I was at a distinct disadvantage in this whole process since I am not yet a mom. I mean, does a 9-year-old still like Hello Kitty? I don't know. I'm embarrassed to say that I spent over an hour in Target that day, agonizing over this one little gift. But I wanted to find something that would actually make this little Angela happy, that would actually bring a smile to her face and not just be, you know, all right. Most of all, I wanted to avoid having this little girl open her present and be disappointed because I was not smart enough to know what a 9-year-old girl would like. One of our ministries here at St. Francis is a relationship with a retired teacher, school teacher in Watts, whom everyone calls Mama Hill. She doesn't have any money or even an office to work out of. She's about 3 feet tall, I think. Seriously, she is tiny. Her hands are crippled from arthritis, but she has taken it on as her mission in life to help the kids in her neighborhood in Watts overcome the barriers of poverty and poor schools and poor self-esteem, to resist the temptations of gangs and drugs, and to make it in this life. The kids call her little house on 92nd Street Mama's house. It is their second home. These kids come from families that can't put much under the Christmas tree, and so this past Sunday we invited them all out here for a Christmas party, and many of us took little white gift tags from a Christmas tree and went out shopping the week before so that they would have some nice little wrapped present to take home and put under the Christmas tree. When it came time for Angela to get her present, I was still worried that I had gotten the wrong thing. And so I went over to her and I told her there was a gift receipt in this package. And if that wasn't the right size or it wasn't quite what she wanted, she could take it back to Target and she could get what she wanted. Blah, blah, blah. But when I finished my speech, it was like she hadn't even heard what I said. She didn't say anything about the gift receipt. She just pointed at me and said, with genuine surprise, "You picked this out for me?" I clearly had been wrapped up in all the wrong things, so I just kind of nodded at her dumbly. And then she smiled. The best smile I have seen in a very long time. The look on her face wasn't pleasure, as I'd hoped for. The look on her face was joy. And it didn't have anything to do with what was wrapped up inside of that present. She hadn't even opened it yet. It clearly was coming from the fact that some random stranger, some flesh and blood person who didn't even know her, had taken the time to think about what she would like, had taken the time to think about her. Her. That same joy was on a lot of faces that day. And not just on the kids' faces, but on our faces. A joy that never would have been experienced if we just sent all the packages by mail and sent a nice card. In the story that we heard from the Gospel of Luke tonight, we are told that a little more than 2,000 years ago, an angel of the Lord appeared to a group of shepherds out on a hillside in Bethlehem, announcing the birth of the Messiah. When the angel makes this announcement, he doesn't say, "See, I am bringing you great news of great pleasure for all the people." The angel says, "I am bringing you news of great joy." And it took this 9-year-old child from Watts to remind me this Christmas that pleasure and joy are not the same thing. Pleasure is a fleeting thing. It comes from a grande non-fat latte at Starbucks, or it comes at the bottom of a glass of Dom Pérignon, or from a cute little hot pink outfit with a Hello Kitty on the front. But joy is something far deeper. Miroslav Volf is a theologian who's currently teaching at Yale, and one of the issues that he takes up in his writing and his teaching is the concern that we as a culture have become so seduced by pleasure that we've grown confused about what really constitutes the good life. We have this phrase, the good life, and our cultural picture of what that means looks something like a trip to Europe every year, a vacation house in the mountains or on the beach in Hawaii, a Christmas dinner table that's so sumptuous and well-appointed that it could be featured on the front cover of Sunset Magazine or Bon Appetit. As a culture, it's hard for us to imagine someone experiencing the good life who has had, for example, to quit her low-paying job with the county to stay home and provide 24-hour care for her mother who's living with Alzheimer's. It's hard for us to imagine someone experiencing the good life who is a father who's raising 4 small children by himself after his wife has died from cancer. But if there's anything that the gospel tells us, it's that living the good life is not the same thing as living a life of pleasure or ease. In the gospel, joy is announced not to people who are living in the lap of luxury. It's announced as real and now to people who are living in very hard times indeed. While our secular culture paints the birth of Christ in these warm, sweet tones, the fact is that Christmas, the real Christmas, the first Christmas, was clearly anything but warm and soft and pleasurable. The real Christmas story is a story of a young couple living in poverty, a couple who will soon be essentially homeless and on the run from a tyrant. It's about a teenage girl having a baby out of wedlock and a young man who's trying to keep her from being stoned to death for her presumed promiscuity. And yet, joy comes. While pleasure is a glass of Dom Pérignon, joy is when you're that woman who's caring for her mom with Alzheimer's and someone cares enough to come sit with her for a couple of hours so that you can go for a walk on the beach. The walk on the beach is a relief and a rest, but the joy comes from knowing the love of a friend, someone who knows you, someone who cares enough for you to intervene for you in a time of need, one who shares in your burden and lets you know you are not alone. At Christmas, we celebrate that utterly unique moment when God came to us wrapped in human flesh. God, the creator of the universe, came to us, knows us, intervened for us, shared our brokenness, and demonstrated to us in everything he did that we are not alone. God didn't have to do any of it. God could have chosen to love us from a distance. God could forgive us from a distance. God could hear our prayers from a distance. God could even send checks in the mail and remain at a distance. But the message of Christmas is that God is lavish enough to show up in the flesh and to go way beyond what is merely necessary. And if we really take that in this Christmas and believe it, then all we can do is stand with Mary and with Joseph and the shepherds and angels at the manger beside his crib and say what that little 9-year-old girl said to me. You mean you did that for me?